Welcome to Tremendous Talk. We got the industry tea and the jokes. Actors, directors, musicians, and more. You're listening to Tremendous Talk.
Hey guys, I'm Law.
And I'm Ash, and this is a Tremendous Talk podcast.
Each week, join us as we guide you through the realms of Hollywood and beyond while we speak to industry professionals in the spotlight.
So grab a boba tea and leave your shoes at the door. Welcome to Tremendous Talk! Brah, brah,
brah. Always a pleasure to be here with you, Ash. See, we have good energy today. We're like we're in a good mood. And I'll tell you why we're in a good mood, because we had some wonderful conversations all surrounding the movie The Prank, out in theaters on March 15th. And today, this week's episode, we're sitting down for a chat with Maureen Barucha, the director of The Prank.
Woohoo! And The Prank follows Ben and his slacker friend Tanner as they play a prank on their high school physics professor when she fails them on a test. As an anxious student, this makes me nervous. They teach their demanding instructor a lesson by falsely accusing her of the murder of a missing student on social media. Dun, dun, dun!
Dramatic drama. That's what films are about. No, but honestly, Maureen is, if you haven't heard of her, keep an eye out, because she has done a ton. We're talking feature films, late night, premium cable streaming, commercial, short films. Maureen can direct it all, and she also does so with excellence, as she's proven time and time again through her impressive roster of projects. She started her career with short films, including Abaji, which premiered in Santa Barbara International Film Festival in 2009, raised in a half Irish Catholic, half Indian Pakistani Burmese Muslim household. Maureen focuses on stories about conflicted characters and is a master of straddling opposing worlds and blending genres. Beautiful.
It was so cool. Just two mixed kids talking to a mixed filmmaker. It was such a great chat. She is truly a filmmaker's filmmaker. We're so happy we got to speak to Maureen and dive into her with her journey from just her beginnings to how she is now, what's inspired her, what's pushing her forward, and the process of making cool shit.
So yes.
Sit back, relax, and let's get this conversation started.
And also, don't forget, check out The Prank on March 15th in theaters. All right. Woo. Ladies and gentlemen, Maureen Barucha. That was late. My late night. Hello, Maureen. My name is Law, and this is Ash, and we are the Tremendous Talk podcast. We love highlighting, you know, creators of color, actors of color, especially the AAPI community. So thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on The Prank. We both loved it. We were texting about it last night. But that said, before we get started, we need to jump into a lightning round to get to know you a little bit.
Oh, better. Okay. First of all, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, of course. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Seriously.
Thank you for this movie. Yeah,
thank you guys. I'm excited. Lightning round. Let's do it.
Let's go. Okay. Going to 7-Eleven. What can I get you?
Milky Way.
Oh, that was a quick answer. I like that. Movie on your watch list that you just cannot wait to see right now.
Ooh. Oh my gosh, what's out right now? The Prank.
That's a good one. I like it. Right there. In theaters, okay. March 15th.
Mm-hmm. And big question, would you pass Mrs. Wheeler's class?
No, I was not good at it. I was not a good student. AP physics class, so I definitely was not an AP physics.
I was not.
What's a class that you were good in at?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I was good at biology. So I did like biology, but not physics. And I was good at an art class.
Amazing. Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat. Like all the creative classes I thrived in, you know, writing and stuff like that, and all the ones that mattered to my parents, nah. Unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, thank you so much.
It was so great.
Well, you know, the prank was so interesting because it felt like kind of nostalgic to me in a way, like not even just going back to high school, but something about like the tone of the movie, just like it's fun, but it was also horror and thriller. And I thought it was a real achievement, like getting to balance all those things. So I'm curious, for you as the filmmaker behind it, can you speak to the tone, what you wanted it to feel like, how you wanted the characters to feel in this world?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's like such a huge compliment, because that is definitely what I was going for. I think I was just really influenced by a lot of the movies in the 70s. I think maybe that's where that kind of nostalgia comes from. I love, you know, I was obsessed with Alfred Hitchcock and suspense and thriller. And I would watch the Alfred Hitchcock Presents, you know, the TV show at Nick at Night as a kid, which was a lot of short form suspense. And then, you know, I went to film school. So, of course, like De Palma and Dressed to Kill and Rear Window and a lot of that stuff. And then again, even homaging like Heathers is one of my favorites and, you know, To Die For. So, kind of that satirical comedy darkness. And there were definitely things that we were homaging as far as visuals. Like we have, you know, giving Rita a slash of light on her face, like Marlena Dietrich, and even kind of a shot, like an homage to The Thing. You know, so kind of just like pulling from images and references that I've loved my whole life. And you know, I did film studies undergrad, so I just love watching movies.
Well,
You're in
this
good
makes me
company.
so happy. As a fellow film nerd and just like a big fan of horror, I definitely saw those homages in it and I was freaking out. Like I was geeking over this movie. So great. But your director's statement that you wrote out, I'm kind of in love with it. And you mentioned celebrating the unconventional. Can you get into a little bit of that? I want to hear about more.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, I grew up in kind of a unusual family. My mom is Irish Catholic, my dad is Indian Pakistani Burmese Muslim, and I think I always felt like a little bit of the unconventional, or, you know, I didn't truly fit into one or the other. And so I think I always gravitated toward, yeah, you know, I mean, not even feeling like ashamed. I think it was just more like I'm just different and not in a bad way. So I love stories that are about conflicted characters or people of crisis of faith, or, you know, the internal conflict of like, where do I belong and who am I? And again, not coming from a negative place. I think that that's what's so great about the prank is that everybody kind of has their own weird moral compass and they kind of live by their own, you know, they kind of live by their own beat of their own drum.
Amazing. You kind of just is something you said something that resonated with both Ash and I, myself. We're both mixed race. Ash is a Filipino mix with white, I believe, and I'm Indian and Filipino myself. So there's something about finding other mixed kids and like finding identity and telling those stories that like really impact me as like a viewer. And a creative. And so I'm wondering when it comes to your mixedness and like your upbringing and your identity itself, how does that affect like you mentioned the unconventional, but beyond that cultural identity and putting that into your films, why is that important to tell those stories from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think so often, you know, again, I'm obsessed with movies and we've kind of grown up seeing kind of a lot of the same type of characters and the same vantage point and perspective. And what I love about growing up in a mixed house, and especially also like a mixed religious house, is that so many of the stories that we hear are similar, but as soon as you change the vantage point or the, you know, a different person in that same story, it becomes a totally different story. And so I think also growing up, you know, both of my grandmothers, my dadi and my granny, were very religious. So I always felt like they were vying for our souls. Like, where are we going to go in the afterlife? So I think that also was like a little fearful and kind of putting both of my grandmothers into this movie. You know, Mrs. Wheeler kind of, again, has her own moral compass. My grandmothers aren't as evil as Mrs. Wheeler, but I think, again, kind of these strong-willed women that they won't let the world kind of knock them down and they're going to go by their own standard. And so I kind of drew from my grandmothers, I think, in that as well.
Wait, let's get into this. This is very exciting. Okay. Mrs. Wheeler, because I was raised so much by my grandmother, I fell in love with Mrs. Wheeler. So much of my heart and my empathy was with her. And my heart was breaking during this movie and everything that happens. And then we take that left turn. Can you talk about like working with this legendary actress and putting together this character and this vivid, wonderful, beautiful journey of Mrs. Wheeler?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, obviously Rita Moreno is a legend, an icon, and untouchable. But I do think the movie only works because of how great she is. You know, you need to be grounded and real in that emotional stuff, like you're saying, like you're really feeling for her. These kids are pulling this prank on her. So when she kind of, you know, seeks revenge back, I think it only works because you really believe that they've wounded her, you know, and she does kind of live in this world of I'm helping them by being tough as nails on them. I'm getting them ready for the real world. And I think that so much of us can relate to that. And again, Rita, I think, had so much fun playing that devilish type of teacher.
Awesome. Yeah, it was so cool to see I mean, your cast is so, there's so many wonderful people I had never seen before, just like making me bust up. Like the faculty in the lounge were so funny. And, you know, obviously your two leads are so great. Keith David's in this, which is awesome, you know. But
what's great for me too is like, you know, I'm really proud of all the people that are in the movie. Most of them I work with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the things I loved is that we have such, and I didn't do it to have representation, but I do think like, the school feels like a school that I went to, right? There's totally. There's not just like one Asian kid. There's not just one, you know, I think it was like filling the world with actors that were the best and no matter, you know, who won the part, it just kind of shook out that way that that's how everybody kind of like filtered the school.
Totally. It looked like my high school. You know, it was just as mixed and nuanced and everyone had their little quirks. I loved it. And, you know, we mentioned this with Ramona. I am kind of a perfect mix of both Ben and Tanner. You know what I mean? Like I am both the weird streamer nerdy kid, but also the really like anxious guy, you know, that's like focused on his career and will bend some rules to get to where he needs to go. But that said, I want to talk about the world that you created because we talked about the tone, obviously, but when it comes to like the horror aspects and the thriller aspects, I want to like, as a director and a filmmaker, how far of a limit did you put, you know, what kind of limitations did you put on the world? Like, what can we show? Like, what can we allude to? Like, how quickly do we want to reveal certain things? Hopefully, I don't know if that's too big.
I think there were no limitations because I think part of what's fun for me is like, I have a vision of how I want it to be. And like, definitely like continuing to have that vision keeps the through line, but then also being flexible and open to people's suggestions, you know, like our DP Matthew Rudenberg is such a genius. And so a lot of times we would talk about the scenes and how we could shoot it, or maybe it tips a little too much that it's like a thriller. But I do think the other thing that kind of brings it really together is Darren Johnson's score. We got a live 16 string orchestra. And so you don't often see this like heavy string orchestra in a teen movie. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the things that just making sure that the world felt rich and grounded and that you can go to comedy places and thriller places if you are, you know, 2 feet or planted on the ground.
Totally. You know, something that we talked about is how much we loved the outtakes.
Oh yeah.
You know, and like it, that's also very nostalgic for me too. Like, you know, movies used to have them in the credits and it was also just great to get clued into just like how the vibe on set was, you know what I mean? But yeah, can you talk about kind of that freedom of improving on set with your cast?
Yeah. I mean, I think like there's definitely a time and a place for improv. Like I do think sometimes it gets out of control in movies and you see it, right? If there's too much fat, but I think that's like why I wanted to put all of the fat in the credits. Cause it was so much fun on set and there is so much of people playing and having fun. And I think that like, that makes you kind of want to watch the movie again to kind of see how everybody was having fun in those scenes. So that's like, I'm a big fan of making sure that you can use all that extra stuff somewhere, because I think it's as enjoyable as the movie itself.
Totally. Super funny. Stingray. I'll never forget that.
Obsessed with it. Obsessed. You know, I've been in this like really bingey mode of watching these like 70s, 80s, 90s movies where everything is practical and the film feels like a film. I get so distracted by today's like CGI and all of these effects and stuff. And I want to give you your flowers because this film brought me back to that. And just like, I was watching a film, man, like a film. The DP's work and the sound designer's work, like everything was so cohesive. And it's just, your vision was incredible. Like, pre-production, what was that like for you? Like, how did you get that all out of your brain?
First of all, thank you so much. That really means a lot. Cause I agree. I love practical, tangible, like when a movie has texture. And I think that it was talking to the production designer, Wendy Samuels. You know, she did my last movie, Golden Arm. So she kind of knows my vibe and like that I like real stuff. Matthew Rudenberg, again, it was like watching all the kinds of movies that we're homaging. And the same thing talking with the actors. It's like, you know, playing things real, playing things grounded so that when the comedy comes out, it feels real. It doesn't feel glossy. It doesn't feel polished. So I think being a little messy and embracing that.
Totally. You know, I'm always curious when we get the opportunity to talk to filmmakers, especially directors, about style. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a big conversation on like what makes an auteur, you know, those pretentious conversations. But when it comes to your own filmmaking, especially with The Prank, on any recent projects, do you look back at your filmography and start to see like, oh, this is me. This is like what my films look like. This is how they feel, or like how the characters come off. Or is that still developing for you as a storyteller?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? Like, I think there's, as I'm working in the television space and the film space, I do think I really gravitate toward perspective and POV shots and really getting inside the head of characters. And so I think I've been honing that, and I look back at some of my work, I'm like, oh, I was kind of playing with that and went deeper, tried that more, kind of was more confident or wanted to explore that more as my work goes along. I also think, like, you know, I did a podcast where somebody pointed out that in my last movie, Golden Arm, in this movie, is it kind of about tough as nails women, again, that are kind of outliers that kind of, you know, march to the beat of their own drum. So I think that I really gravitate toward those type of characters. And that's another through line. And I also think that comes because for me, I was really influenced by, you know, quote unquote, more masculine movies growing up. I really loved Fight Club, and I really loved, you know, Taxi Driver. And I think what it was is that I just gravitated toward the themes that usually more masculine movies get to explore, which is disillusionment. And so I think that disillusionment leads people to be extreme, right? And in their moral compass, they're overcorrecting. And so I think that's another theme that I think is a through line in a lot of my work.
Wow, what an answer. That was awesome.
I got to take it over. Sorry, I'm hitchhiking. No, the female empowerment in this film. It is raw female rage. Like, you get into, I don't know how you did it, dude, but you went real deep into the nuances of what being a woman is, from the different age ranges and everything, from like being a woman in high school and to just like discovering who you are, to being a woman in your older ages and really like owning it up, right? But this film,
I think tapping into that rage, yes.
Yes, I love it. I love it. But this film is so, it's so delicious on the surface. I kind of don't want to like ruin it by digging into it too much, but there's so many deep meanings in this movie, and it's literally impossible to not see, like, jumping to conclusions, the mob mentality, playing on the heartstrings of empathy. The devil is really in the details in this. Can you walk us through the intricacies on like how you leveled in that like subconscious and subtext? It was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, again, thank you guys so much. I'm so happy that you loved the movie and that, you know, you really saw what I was trying to do, because I think that's like part of the thing is making sure that the right audiences are getting what I was trying to do, and you guys are exactly talking about it. I think when I thought about this movie, I mean, I always, as a kid, you know, the boy that cried wolf was such like a tale that like you hear over and over again. But what I kind of love about this movie is kind of like that, but a little inversed, right? The boy who cried wolf, but you don't know who's crying wolf. And kind of it is scary either way. You know, how far will you go to seek revenge? How far will you go with this lie? And that, you know, you kind of can't take things back in the world that we live in. So I think it's kind of exploring, you know, one, how scary it is to be a student, that teachers are able to like overtake your life. But then also, I think adults are scared of kids and how, you know, how they can ruin your life as well. Totally. So I think it's like a twisted, you know, the boy who cried wolf a bit.
I love that.
Beautiful.
You know, I want to bring this up because it's, you know, it's a recent event, but Cord Jefferson won an Oscar for American Fiction, and he was up there giving a message to Hollywood, being like, you know, these $200 million movies are a risk to make, and it's a risk to make that money back. I get that. I get how the industry works, but shouldn't we be making smaller budgets and giving other people opportunities to tell their stories, because there's so many stories to tell? I'm curious, like, with a film like this that you shot in a month, right? And how does it embolden you as a filmmaker? And how do you reflect on that kind of messaging in terms of like the big picture of the entertainment industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I hope people go see the movie, because that's the only way that little movies keep getting made, is that if people take a chance. And so I think I would always hope that I get to play in both, right? Of course I wanna direct a studio movie, but I also always want to be working in the indie space, because you get to have more control, you get to have more freedom, and you get to explore more, because you're not necessarily, you know, boxed into the parameters of what they think audiences will like. And so that's why I'm so proud of The Prank, is that because it was indie and because it was really about my vision, I was able to kind of try things out and kind of take a risk and show that line of the tone.
Yeah, and it totally works, right? Like you got to tell your story about a woman scorned and then some, and some like really what like the two leads are so I love their chemistry and their banter. I thought Ramona did an especially great job. She's so funny.
Surprising every time. Ramona will give you a delivery that you weren't expecting. So
I
that's
love it. I
because
mentioned.
the script was great by Becca and Zach White. Like they wrote something that was just fun.
Yeah. I loved her line, but she said it was like improv on set, the human shit line. Oh man, I was busting up. I had to pause it and realize that's so funny. That being said, weird segue, but we don't have a lot of time left, but something that we love to do on Tremendous Talk is pass the mic over to you. So we want to give you the opportunity on our small platform to sit on the soapbox and say whatever it is that your heart desires, whether it's a message for other creatives, promotion for any projects that you have, or something that you're just feeling right now. We'd love to hear whatever you have to say. So here's the mic. Pass
Oh, okay.
it.
I mean, I think like, my joke, it's not a joke, it is my truth, but I really love to make cool shit. And I think that the more that you can help other people up and that you can inspire other people, we gotta have more pipelines. We gotta open more doors. And I think, there is such a, I think when you come from a lack mentality, I think you get small. But I think when you kind of open the door and you work with more creatives or you find more voices, I think then you just kind of live in abundance. And I hope that this town continues to do that. I know we're in a restricted time as far as like jobs and TV shows, but I hope what that means is because they've cut so much stuff back that there's only room for much more to grow. And so I hope that means that, again, underrepresented voices that haven't been able to tell their stories and their lived experience get to make indie movies and TV shows. And so I think that only works if we each help each other.
Totally. I think there's a motto that you have that like resonates with all of us in this room is make dope shit, especially we make it with dope people, right? So I
Yes.
can't wait to see what else you do. But the prank was so delightful and unexpected, and I congratulations, really. We both really enjoyed it. So,
You so much.
absolutely.
I'm happy to like have you guys have watched it and enjoyed it.
Of course,
Oh, yay! Completely, completely. You are such a filmmaker's filmmaker, and I just have to
yeah.
say thank you for giving me a new role model in the space.
Oh, yay. That's so sweet. Sorry. I know I should have kept those 2 cents. That's very, very sweet. Thank you so much. Congratulations.
So much.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you on and really appreciate your time today.
The Tremendous Talk podcast is produced by Lawrence Sharma, Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, Gabriela David, Joseph Feralde, and Jeremiah Abraham in collaboration with Tremendous. The Tremendous Talk podcast jingle is by Jared Sanchez and Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, produced at Hamsterdam Records.